Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopijana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Gopijana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Brajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada,
Jaya Prabhupada. Actually, your heart, which he's looking at, not really your voice. So don't worry about it.
I know, still.
So I hope all of you received the questionnaire.
Yes.
For the sixth chapter,
I
received your email. Thank you so much, Arnika, for sending the answer. I don't know if you...
I have brought the sheet, but I did the last five.
Okay.
Because
I mentioned that the last five are very important.
Yes, I made sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Others I waited and I procrastinated.
Mm-hmm.
And then did the five.
Okay. All right. That's fine. So, I have the questionnaires. So, what we will do is everyone has a copy of Bhagavad Gita. I mean, we can go through the chapter again, and then we can discuss more about how we can apply, the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which talks about the Dhyana Yoga on a day-to-day basis, which is a very important chapter. So we will go through all the questions, and then we can have open discussions and sharing of information and knowledge. So it'll be more interactive than me just talking. This chapter is rather little long. I believe it's 47 verses, if I'm exactly right, or 43. I'm trying to remember. 47 verses, yeah. Alright, so questionnaire for the sixth chapter. So, what is the name of chapter 6? The answer is Dhyana Yoga. So Dhyana Yoga means
meditation.
Yoga in meditation. So we do meditation, yoga, so we can control our mind, our senses, so we can realize the absolute. Okay, so second question, what is the definition of a true mystic? Yeah, he's the perfect mystic. So we will come back to that answer again at the end of the chapter, because even though Krishna explains about what a yogi does, a true mystic does, controlling his mind, controlling his senses.
Totally detached.
Huh?
Totally detached from material.
Yeah, even though a yogi does everything, and then in the final few verses, he explains that of all the yogis, a yogi who completely meditates on me and then giving all the results to me, he's the true yogi, he's the true mystic. But anyway, in this regard, this actually from, I believe, the first or second verse. So the answer is, a true mystic is the one who is not attached to the fruits of his work, but work as obligated. Okay. So meaning we all do work in this world, right? We do fruitative works. So the difference between a person who is doing work and a person who is in Krishna consciousness or devotional service yoga, devotional yoga, bhakti yoga, is that you know, we actually work for Krishna, and also we actually do our, you know, normal day-to-day work, but we actually give the fruits of our work to Krishna, and also the results. In other words, we just do because we got to work, because the nature of us is to work. So that also puts us into the mode of goodness, right? And also in many instances also in the mode of passion. You know, people work very passionately, but it's better to work in the mode of goodness, you know, in the sattvic mode, because in the passion, if you are thriving for someone, if you are running behind someone, if we discussed about this last week, like if you are not getting it, then we get frustrated, and then, you know, hi both, man.
Hi, Mom.
Nice to see you.
Good to see
Welcome
you.
Back.
Thank you.
So we are discussing chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga. So it's good to work. It's good to work in the mode of goodness, at least. Preferably not in the mode of passion. And mode of ignorance means basically you are not working. Most of the time you are like just lying around and sleeping, and then like, you know, you're just not doing anything. So that's mode of ignorance. That actually leads to darkness. But it doesn't mean that we should not take enough rest. You know, that's also explained in this chapter, that we should have enough sleep, and that, you know, the sleep is not sleep as such, but sleep means rest, because we work very hard, and then end of the day we are just tired, and we go to bed and we take a little rest, we energize ourselves, and then we, you know, the next day we continue, and then we go and work again. So that's actually a rest. But like, you know, 6 to 8 hours according to Vedic standards, 6 to 8 hours of sleep is enough for, you know, someone who is healthy. You know, if you're sick, you can take a couple of extra hours. That's fine. But if you're sleeping for like 18 hours a day, that's a different story. So, you know, that's mode of ignorance. So we want to avoid that. So we do work, but what we are doing is like we are not attached to the fruits of our work, but we actually do it as an obligation. That is, so an ideal yogi does that in his day-to-day life. So he's the true mystic. So the third question is, between the eightfold yoga system and karma yoga, which one does Krishna recommend and why? Is everyone familiar with the eightfold yoga system? You probably will. So it's called as Ashtanga yoga. Ashta means eight in Sanskrit. Anga means parts or limbs of our body. So you do exercises in eight different ways, which is the Ashtanga yoga. The main purpose of doing the Ashtanga yoga is to control our mind and control our sense. That is the main purpose of doing the Ashtanga yoga. So the Ashtanga yoga serves controlling the mind. That's very important. It's more physical. But we want to go beyond that, just a physical aspect. That's what's happening in a lot of our Western culture these days, and also in Indian culture. Like, people are so inclined to yoga, which is good. Yoga is a good thing to do, because it's also part of the Vedic system to do yoga. But the main purpose of doing the yoga is to keep our body, mind, and you know, spirit fit and happy and blissful. So we can focus on the, you know, the higher purpose of life. But it's not only just about doing just physical exercises. There is something more beyond that. So I don't know if you guys heard the definition of what a yoga is. Can anyone define yoga? What yoga is?
I know that yoga means union.
Yep, absolutely. So yoga means to connect. So connect your individual self to the Supreme. So that's the meaning of the yoga. So why Krishna is recommending Karma Yoga compared to the Ashtanga Yoga? Okay, so the main reason is doing fruitative works is relatively easy compared to doing Ashtanga Yoga, because Ashtanga Yoga involves the mind, it also involves austerity, and then it also involves the physical exercise part of it. So probably you will be spending like quite a few hours of your time doing the Ashtanga Yoga, so you can actually control your mind. So it's a hard process. You need to sweat, and then like, you know, you need to focus on like controlling your senses and mind, because the mind is flickering, wavering all the time, going all sort of places and things like that. So in that sense, Karma Yoga or doing fruitative action is better than doing Ashtanga Yoga. Moreover, we live in this age where people are short-lived. You know, people live maximum like 100 to 125 years. But in those days, in the previous yugas, people were living for like, you know, 100, 200, 300, 400 years or more. So they had more time to focus more on the Ashtanga Yoga part. They got more time to do that. But now, you know, we are so busy. We have like school, we have like career, and we have family, we have responsibility, you know, this and that. And even maintaining our own self. Forget about maintaining, you know, the people around us. Just maintaining our own self, like, itself is very difficult. So for us, doing, you know, 2 or 3 hours of Ashtanga Yoga every day, it's tough. It's kind of practically impossible. So in that sense, Krishna in this particular verse suggests to do Karma Yoga. Okay, you know, you go and do fruitative activities. So fruitative activities is good, but as we discussed in the previous classes, the only trouble is if you do karma, you know, if you do an action, there is a consequence for that, right? So it's better to do a Krishna conscious work, which comes along along the path of akarma. Akarma means even if you do one particular action, you are not bound by the consequence of that particular action. So Krishna recommends in the second and chapter, third chapters of the Bhagavad Gita to do akarma, which means you perform fruitative activities that doesn't bound you. That is akarma. So that's even better than doing just the karma. Right? Yeah.
I just was wondering, could you give an example of a karma?
Mm. Okay, so any activities which is related to devotional service is akarma.
So chanting rounds.
Yes. So there are 9 different ways you can actually do devotional service. Have you heard about like the 9 ways, like, you know, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, like Pada Sevanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atma Divedanam. I might have missed a couple of them. But there are 9 different ways you can do devotional service to Krishna. Yeah, Archanam Mandanam. So hearing and chanting, that is the first 2 important things. You are absolutely right. So hearing about Krishna and chanting the name of Krishna is very, very important. Yes.
This is devotional service.
That's devotional service. That's the top 2.
Right now.
Yeah. Right now, that's what's happening. You are hearing, and also I'm talking. Talking also is chanting. It's not only chanting or japa, but talking is also chanting.
About Krishna.
About Krishna and his pastimes about Krishna, or his glories about Krishna. Everything is spiritual.
So would a karma also be referred to sometimes as spiritual karma?
Yes. Yes. True. That's the spiritual bank balance, which never goes away. As we go through the questions, Krishna explains in this chapter that like for a person who is involved in spiritual activities, just say like if I start doing a spiritual activity and then after a while I fall off from that because of due to several reasons, what happens to that person? You know, he didn't focus on his material life and he didn't focus on his spiritual life, and what's going to happen to him? But Krishna actually says that, you know, In this particular system, nothing is lost. It's like a credit in the bank which never vanishes. Let's say I have $100 in Bank of America, and then if I go and spend it, it's gone. But all the spiritual karma, all the spiritual pious activities which we acquire, it's there. It never goes away. Even though we may finish this particular life not being completely successful in going back to Krishna or attain perfection, it will continue in our next life. Yeah. Any questions?
Thank you.
Sure. Okay, move on. Yeah, sure.
So, like, if I'm, like, in school, doing work, and I'm thinking, I'm dedicating that work to Krishna, is that one of the ways to be?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Rather than being, like, attached to the results of the work.
Exactly.
Like, worried about whether it will be this or that.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter, it's just for Krishna.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So, he also explains in Bhagavad Gita that whatever you do, you know, whatever you eat, you know, whatever austerities you perform, what are the sacrifices you perform, you do it as an offering to me, and then I accept it. So,
How
to offer?
Yeah.
So, there is a way to do that. So, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that with love and devotion, that's the key tenet. With love and devotion, if one offers a fruit, a flower, some water, a leaf, to me, I accept it. So he says, patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prachade. Meaning, like, patram means a leaf, pushpam, flower, phalam, fruit, toyam, water, you know. But the main part in that is you offer with love and devotion. That is the most important thing. This is like very basic thing. Anyone can offer this. Anyone can get like a little bit of water or like a little flower or like a little leaf or like, you know. So anyone can offer it. He actually makes it, the process, very simple. So we can do it. So you can actually do that on a day-to-day basis.
So you just, like, for example, you just take a glass of water and say, like, offer this water.
Yeah. In the morning, you have a picture of Krishna, and then, like, you offer it to Krishna in the morning after taking bath, before going to school or work.
Right? So you just leave a glass in front of it.
For a few minutes, and like 5-10 minutes, and then, like, request Krishna, please, I'm offering it, so please take it. And then Krishna will accept it.
It explains more specific how to do it.
Yeah.
So if you visit the gift shop later tonight, there's like so many books in the back. There should be some explanations on like how to set up your altar at home, how to do these things at home.
If you want to do according to the proper standard, this is a very simplified process. You can be in a train, you can be in a plane, but still the more important thing is like whether you remember Krishna to offer it to Krishna. That's the most important thing. But if you want to do it like properly with all the standards, elaborately and stuff, As Kelly mentioned, we have booklets available. We have information available on the internet where you can look it up, and then you can do it according to the standards.
And if you're on a train, you could picture Krishna in your mind as you're saying the prayer or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, by Krishna's definition, what does it take to be a yogi? Any clues?
Sense control, be able to be not attached to material nature.
Yeah, so you are absolutely right. So, you know, ceasing or avoiding too much of sense gratification, so too much of sense enjoyment. So that actually takes it to be a yogi. Because a yogi completely ceases from doing all these activities. So he can focus on the self. He can focus on himself, you know, the super soul inside his body. So he tried to avoid too much of sensual attraction and sense gratification and things like that.
And then it said, like, sex is, like, out of the question, right?
Mm.
That's what I read in the book today. It said that, like, it wouldn't be possible to be a yogi.
Yeah, I mean, becoming a yogi, it's a big thing.
Yeah.
So we are trying to be, you know, like, we are trying to become a devotees here.
Yeah.
So, as I said, becoming a yogi, it takes a lot of austerities and patience and also sacrifices and things like that. And we are so short-lived, so we want to get out of this place as soon as possible, in the ideal sense. So, saying that, I'm not discouraging people to become yogis. I mean, becoming a yogi is fine. Krishna also explained that becoming a yogi is okay, that's fine. But at the same time, considering the amount of time left here for us and then the amount of time you need to invest to become a yogi, it's not easy. So, saying that Krishna consciousness doesn't say that you actually, you know, indulge yourself in too much of sense gratification, as you said, but it's more of how you do it in a regulated fashion, so that you don't forget the focus of your life. You know. Hmm? Yeah. So, fifth question is, define Yoga Rurukshu and Yoga Ruda. Okay, this is kind of a tough question, so I will read the answer for you guys. So, yeah, Yoga Rurukshu is the person who is in the beginner stage of the Eightfold Ashtanga Yoga system. And Yoga Ruda is the one who has climbed up to the top of the yoga ladder. So, a person who is in the beginning stage, he has to do the work, like, you know, the physical yoga thing. You know, and focus, you know, focusing more on the self and like controlling in mind. He actually has to do the work because he is in the beginning stage. But when he reaches the advanced stage, what he does is he is completely devoid of doing any activities. Meaning that he is completely situated in the self. He is always meditating within his own self. So he doesn't really have to go on do activities like us. So we should be very careful not to imitate these yogis, because yogis, they have attained, like, you know, they attain to a level that they don't really have to go and do any fruitative activities. But for us in the beginning stage, we should not try to imitate those people and say like, oh, I don't want to do anything, I just want to sit ideal. That actually leads you to mode of ignorance, you know, the tamasic mode, and then you'll be like lazy and then sleeping and things like that. So you don't want to get into that. So you need to be very careful in that, not to try to imitate people who are very, very advanced. So it's very very important to know and realize where we are in our spiritual life. Then we can try to follow the footsteps of people who have already reached there. That's also part of the knowledge, to find out like where we are in our spiritual life. All right. So when is one considered elevated in yoga according to Krishna? Any clues? Question number 6. When is one considered elevated in yoga according to Krishna? So it's both. It's not indulging too much in sense gratification, at the same time not too much involved in fruitative activities. Both. So then the person is considered to be elevated in yoga, according to Krishna. Okay. This is a very interesting question. How does one attain tranquility? Yeah, that's also there.
I
yeah.
Can't remember.
Does this one have to
has like total control of his mind?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Relinquishing material desires?
Yeah. All of the above.
So what I was thinking was like not getting too excited, too disappointed.
Right. Right, balance, right? Yeah. So, yeah, all of the above. And very specifically, a person who has completely controlled the mind and whose actions are directed by the super soul, the Paramatma feature, you know, in the heart, then that person is actually considered to be in, you know, completely serene, like in tranquility. Because his actions are not based on his mind or like his senses, but he is more directed by his super soul, the Paramatma feature. Yeah.
Would his actions be of devotion and love because of that?
Yeah.
They would all be like really loving.
Yeah. Yeah. So how does a yogi see everything? Your answer for the previous one, 6:30. Yeah. So, a person who is in complete direction of the super soul, who completely controlled his minds, so he sees everything, moving and, you know, non-moving objects in this world as same, or like parts and parcels of Krishna. So in that sense, he sees everything in Krishna and Krishna in everything. The entire material universe and, you know, everything, moving and non-moving things, like they are all part of Krishna and Krishna in everything. So in that sense, even though like we are seeing so many things, I see a mic, I see a computer, I see the deities, but like, you know, the consciousness is still not like, I'm not seeing Krishna in my computer. I'm not that elevated. So,
but
yeah,
you know, without Krishna, it couldn't exist.
Nothing, exactly.
Nothing
exactly. The consciousness is the key. So once we get there, then, you know, we see things as they are. All right. List 5 things one should do to practice yoga. Yep.
We don't
have kusha grass here. At least we have a mat here, so.
And kusha grass and put the deer skin set like that.
Yeah.
Very
so that everything is very scientific. So kusha grass, deer skin, all these things, they drive away you know, insects and things coming very close to, you know, close to you when you do the meditation. And then when you're sitting in the, you know, the Padma position, like cross-legged in this position, you know, all your chakras, you know, we have 7 chakras in our body, like, you know, so all these are like aligned, and then the energy flows like in straight. So again, you can't actually go and do this when you are in Union Square or Washington Square Park, you know. So if you really want to focus on yourself, and if you want to, you know, like avoid distractions from doing the meditation, you prefer to be in a secluded place, you know. In those days, the yogis go and do it in mountains and caves and things like that. But now, at least if you are lucky enough to find a calm room in our in our life, then, you know, you still can do it. So, yeah, secluded place, posture is very important, and also these extra paraphernalia like kusha grass and deer skin certainly help. And Krishna also says that it should not be like too high or too low. You know, there should be some balance. And it should be in a sacred place, and by this way, the yogi should control his mind, senses, and activities by fixing on one point, which is actually your super soul. Okay, what makes it impossible to become a yogi? This is an interesting question. So we talked about how to become a yogi, and this question is what makes it impossible to become a yogi. So as Kelly was mentioning, you know, everything in moderation, everything in balance, you know, the person who actually eats not too much or not too little, a person who actually sleeps not too much or not too little, so will be in the perfect position to become a yogi. But if this pattern is not followed, then it becomes impossible for a person to become a yogi, because you know, like eating and sleeping, they are very important, because it nourishes both our body, mind, and also our soul. So it plays an important role in what we eat, and then how much rest we are getting, so we can stay focused in our spiritual life. So as I said before, sleeping 6 to 8 hours is enough, and eating anything which is edible and easily digestible. And if you go further in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also explains about what kind of foodstuffs one should eat and one should not eat, and what time, you know, one should eat and one should not eat, and all the information are available in Bhagavad Gita. So when we go through that, we will discuss those things. Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha Ki Jai. So, list 4 characteristics of samadhi. This is the question for a pure yogi. So, samadhi is the term like we hear very often. The yogis get into the trance. So, what are the characteristics? So, one of those is ability of the yogi to see the self by pure mind and relish the rejoice in the self. He can actually be able to see the self, which is also called as soul. And when the yogi is situated in transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. So that's what we call it as spiritual bliss. When people do yoga, they feel that bliss. So that's called as transcendental bliss, which is part of our soul too, because our soul is made up of Sat, Chit and Ananda, right? Ananda part is there, the bliss is there. And the third one is...
Sorry.
Yeah, sure.
Something silly about my own nature. I thought if I just got it tattooed here, I'd add it. But it takes a little more work. Nada.
Nice.
And I was the type very impatient, as I am. Sacha, now let me just go for the Ananda. So at least it reminds me, though, that is what I really am, deep in, and that is what I want.
True. Yeah, we all seek happiness, you know. Happiness is very important. It's part of us. So the third characteristic is, you know, a person who is established, this, you know, the yogi doesn't depart from the truth and thinks that there is no better gain, because he actually feels that bliss inside himself, and then there is nothing more than that. So he's like so much satisfied with his spiritual practice that he actually don't want anything in this material world, because he's so satisfied within himself, so he doesn't have to go and find it outside, right? So the fourth one is, by situated in yoga, the yogi's faith is never shaken even in the midst of greatest difficulties. So since he is so fixed, even though there is so much of onslaughts by this material world, you know, like disease or like problems with the people around him and things like that, but still the yogi is completely fixed on his spiritual practice. He doesn't want to deviate that, because when you actually get that higher taste, you actually want to experience more. Even Krishna consciousness is like that, you know, we come and then we do things and then we develop a taste for like chanting or like doing our services and things like that. And this is like spiritual happiness. This is not something material happiness, which is temporary. So when we experience that higher taste, we want to have more. So, which is absolutely fine. which is absolutely fine to actually go for it. That's why we do more devotional service. So someone asked Prabhupada this question, I believe, like, what is the result of chanting? Prabhupada answered the question very simply, more chanting. So you chant, you know, you purify your heart, and then you get a taste for it, and then you want to chant more. When you do devotional service, and then you get a taste for it, and you want to do more, you want to do more. So that is the result of chanting. You do more chanting, more devotional service. So, like that. So describe pratyahara. Any clue? Okay.
What is the term again?
Pratyahara. Pratyahara, some people call hara. Yeah. Hara.
H-A-R-A,
yeah.
I don't know that.
That's hare, actually, yeah.
Hare, which comes from hara.
Yeah, hara, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The cessation of sense activity?
Yes. So, it's a state where the yogi, by proper conviction, he gradually sees sense activities and focus more on his self. So by true knowledge and intelligence, he sees that, you know, this particular sense activity is not good for my spiritual practice, but this is good for my spiritual practice. So he uses his discrimination and intelligence, and so he sees activities and also do activities which help him in the spiritual perfection. So that's pratyahara. That's a state of pratyahara. So how can one realize one's qualitative identity with the Supreme? So we are all quantitatively same to Krishna. We are all parts and parcel of Krishna. In one sense, as a lot of people say, I am God. What do they actually mean, that I am God? Yeah. So what they actually mean is, like, your soul is a fragment of the super soul. You are part and parcel of the Krishna. That's why in that sense you are quantitatively one with Krishna. But qualitatively, you are not one with Krishna. Because Krishna has unlimited qualities. Even though in Nectar of Devotion, book, it's mentioned he has 64 qualities. Even the Vishnu Tattvas, like Lord Narayan, Lord Narasimhadeva, Lord Ramachandra, they have only 60 qualities. So Krishna has that extra 4 qualities. But saying that, we should not restrict Krishna into only like 64 qualities. He has unlimited qualities. So, so how we can realize that? So one can realize one's qualitative identity with the Supreme by fixing our mind on Krishna, thinking that I am part of Krishna. So describe the observations of a true yogi. So which is very similar to what we have seen before. A person who is in complete yoga, he sees Krishna in everything and everywhere. So that's the observation. So we all observe things. Oh, that's a nice curtain, or like that's a nice murti, and things like that. We observe things all the time. But if you see Krishna in that, that's the real observation. So that's what yogis do. Okay. Describe a perfect yogi. So the answer is, a perfect yogi is one who, by comparison, by his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and also in their distress. Not only in happiness but also in distress, by comparing with his own self. Okay. What is Arjuna's response to Krishna's description of Dhyana Yoga?
I felt like Arjuna when I was reading it all.
We are all Arjuna.
Yeah.
We are all in that state, right?
Made me feel better when he said what I was thinking.
That's good. That's absolutely right. Because Krishna, you explained all these things to me, you know, how to control and do all these different kinds of activities. But it's not easy. It's very difficult because the mind is restless. The mind is turbulent. It's all over the place. And it's like, you know, what do they...
Trying to control the wind.
Yeah, and he uses the word like the cloud in the sky. It's like, it, you know, it just gets swept away. Like, you know, we all get swept away. Our minds get swept away with so many different things. So, and in that situation, all of us are in the same situation, you know. The mind is very hard to control. So that was Arjuna's response. So what were the two principles Krishna gave in answer to Arjuna? Define them. Two principles to control the mind.
Chanting.
Yeah. Any other clues? Two things.
And
practice.
Chanting and detachment by practicing.
Practice and detachment. Practice means all the different type of devotional service we do. The 9 different types of devotional service we do, they are all belongs to the practice. And chanting is one of the very main thing in that practice. So by practice and detachment, we can control the mind.
Like, if I understand right by this, like if we do more devotional service, we are like involved more in Krishna, we think more about Krishna. And by thinking more about Krishna, we think less about other stuff, right?
That's detachment. That comes automatically. So practicing devotional service is what it does is, first of all, we cease to do all those different activities, and that is also a kind of a detachment. Because if your senses are not controlled and if you are too attached to that, then like all sort of problems come. So by doing devotional service, so you are detaching yourself by doing other kind of sense gratification things. So that's a detachment. So how you do it, that is the practice part. So these two things are very important. Practice and also detachment. So practice makes one
perfect.
Perfect, right? So only through practice one become perfect. So we should not lose our heart. Oh, I'm chanting this many rounds, but I'm still not getting any taste, or like, you know, nothing is happening. So you should not feel dejected. So you should keep practicing it. So gradually, when the anarthas, you know, the unwanted desires in the heart goes away, we will start experiencing the higher taste. So keep the gun going. So what is Vairagya? Question number 18. Vairagya means fixed up. You know, every day morning I'm getting up and then I'm doing at least 2 rounds in the morning before I go to work. That's Vairagya. You know, it's fixed up. You are fixed up in your spiritual practices. You are fixed up in your devotional service. Whatever service you do, you are fixed up. So that is called as Vairagya. So if you actually have Vairagya, what happens? It also means you are detached from doing other things. Let's say like I get up in the morning and I wanted to chant two rounds instead of looking at Facebook. That's detachment, right? Because you have that Vairagya that you want to chant one round before you actually want to do anything else. That's Vairagya. So it's also part of the detachment process. And also engagement of the mind and actions in the spirit. In our sense, it's devotional service. You know, for a yogi, it's more of engagement of the mind in the spirit, means like sitting in the posture and then doing yoga. That's for a yogi. But for us, it's more of practical devotional service. We do like chanting or hearing Prabhupada's, you know, other lectures, or doing any service, coming to the temple, you know, attending Mangalarati, things like that. So. Okay, so what is Arjuna's doubt? We discussed in the initial part of the lecture. So, what happens? A person who takes the spiritual activities and then he completely stopped doing his material activities and then at some stage he quits it, and then what happens to that person? You know, whether he's completely lost, because like he was not successful materially and he's not successful spiritually, whether he's totally lost or something like that. So that was the doubt of Arjuna to asking to Krishna. So what happens to such person? So the next question is, describe what happens to unsuccessful yogis. So this is the answer Krishna actually gives to Arjuna for this particular question. This is like spiritual bank balance. Nothing is lost. So this person will be born into the family of righteous people and aristocratic people. Meaning that if you are born in a family of very, very poor people, and if you are poor all throughout the life, like struggling hard, you know, for maintaining your daily bread, then you actually don't have the time to do any spiritual activities. If you go and tell someone who is like struggling too much to get even food to eat, if you go and tell him that go and do yoga, he's going to, what are you talking about? I need food to eat first, and things like that. So a person who the other side of this coin is like a person who is rich, he has everything in abundance. So he actually don't have to hanker for that. Let's say one person has like $20 billion. He won't hanker for like $20,000 because he already has this in abundance. That actually, you know, applies to other things in material life as well, you know. So you have everything in abundance. You don't have to really starve for that or like hanker for that. So that also means that this is one section. The other section is these unsuccessful yogis also born into the family of transcendentalists or devotee family. So they already have this knowledge, and the parents, you know, who already have this knowledge, it's much easier for the child who are born in this family to follow the practice of yoga because the parents are already doing it. And then so it's kind of like a nice glue between the child which was born and also for the parents. You know, they all do it together, happily. So righteous people born in the family of righteous people, or family of rich aristocracy, or born in the family of transcendentalists. So by taking such birth, the unsuccessful yogis follow their spiritual activities in the continuing birth. So this is how it keeps going. So what is a tapasvi? Tapasvi. It comes from the root of the word tapa. Yeah. So one who does austerity and aesthetic, like, you know, is a tapasvi, who does it. So, who does spiritual activities, controlling the mind and focus on the self. What is a jnani? Jnani means more of?
Knowledge.
Yeah. So, one who does the empirical study of yoga and yoga system, he is called as a jnani, who is more on into the mental platform. So, what is a karmi? A person who does the karma is called as a karmi. So, a karmi is the one who does fruitative activities in this world. So, describe the characteristics of the highest yogi. So, who is the highest yogi? He is. And we can also become the highest yogi by becoming a devotee of Krishna. Right? So, Yoginam Api Sarvesam, that verse. So, in that, Krishna's, Krishna explains that of all the yogis, one who completely meditates on me and remembers me, he's the highest yogi. He's the perfect yogi. He's the true mystic. So, yogi is like, he has like complete faith in Krishna and he always thinks about Krishna. So, the firm faith is, initially we have some faith in Krishna, so that's called as Shraddha. Shraddha means like, we have some faith, okay, I like the temple, I want to go there, I have some faith in Krishna, so I'll go to the temple. And then we do devotional service, and after that, it follows with, Bhajana Kriya and Ajnana Sukriti, you know, the whole process. So Bhajana Kriya means like you go and chant and you hear about Krishna, and then our unwanted disease from the heart gets washed away. And then we reach to the stage called Nishtha. Nishtha means one who is really fixed up with a firm faith that, yes, I have complete faith in Krishna, and then he will take care of me. And then I will do this process, and then I will attain perfection in this lifetime. So that person is, he's in Nishtha. So faith in Krishna is extremely important. So giving up all our results to Krishna and have complete faith in Krishna, Krishna will protect us. One way or other, it works. Try this. It certainly works. And also thinking of Krishna. You know, it's not only about having faith in Krishna, but also, if you have firm faith, you will be thinking about Krishna. That's a different story. But, you know, it's also important to think about Krishna. You know, whether, you know, things are going good in our life or things are going bad in our life, you still think Krishna. If something good happens, you thank Krishna. And if something is not going good, then...
You thank also.
What's going on? you think of Krishna and render devotional service. You know, it's not only faith and also thinking about Krishna, but you should practically do something in your life. So, it helps you to progress fast. That's why association of the devotees is very important. So you can do devotional service with other like-minded people. It's fun. It's fun. Krishna says that, you know, this process is joyfully performed. That's what he says in Bhagavad Gita. You know, this process is joyfully performed. It's not like, oh, Krishna, I have to do this. No, not like that. It's joyfully performed. Just come and then chant in kirtan, dance in kirtan. It's all fun. So, it's joyfully performed. So, faith, thinking about Krishna, and doing practical devotional service. You know, if we do this, then that person is a highest yogi, according to Krishna. Alright, practical and personal application of Bhagavad Gita principle according to chapter 6. This I asked everyone to please answer. Okay, so this is open session. So you can share, you know, based on your life situation or realization. So first question is, what would you do and how would you adjust your life to become a true mystic? Anyone wants to volunteer? Perfect. Keep doing it.
Yeah.
Keep doing it. It's all purifying. Okay. Yeah. Any other takers? Anyone wants to answer the question?
Yeah, I guess like just controlling the senses more.
Mm-hmm.
Like less food. Like being more aware of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like being so consumed with this material results of things, like pretty much thinking of Krishna more, remembering him more, chanting more, and eating more. Like when I eat, thinking of Krishna, pretty much just trying to do everything revolving around Krishna, rather than like sometimes Krishna and then sometimes material, like me time.
Mm.
So yeah, I think that's pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, reading more Bhagavad Gita, and listening to more lectures.
Fantastic. Keep doing it. Yeah. He covered two important points. Remembering Krishna and also thinking about Krishna. The whole point of doing all these things, you know, hearing, chanting, and then like, you know, listening to lectures and doing everything is to remember Krishna. So that's what they say, like, always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. That is the main goal of our life. So what happens is, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that whatever state of consciousness we have at the time of death, you know, that particular state we actually attain in the next birth. Right? So, it would be very ideal at the time of our death. We don't know when it's coming. It may be tomorrow or like in 50 years. That's a different story. But if we can remember Krishna, then that would be the ideal, which can lead us to the better life, you know, next life. Or maybe go back to Krishna in this lifetime as well. So that's also there. So all these things help us to remember Krishna more, so we don't forget him. So.
And remembering meaning like his pastimes, his face, or his name? Anything?
Everything. Everything, all of them.
All at once?
Yeah.
I mean, can
or at different times.
Yeah.
Sometimes you might be thinking of a story you heard about Krishna,
yeah,
or something you might want to do for Krishna.
As long as you're just remembering him.
Exactly. Remembering about Krishna or his pastimes, or thinking about, even thinking about doing service for Krishna is remembering about Krishna.
So it'd probably be helpful to learn more about the pastimes so I could know more to think about.
So let's say
me to see Krishna and everything coming, like walking, you know, for an hour, and I'm outside and I see the birds and the trees and I'm saying the names and it just kind of.
So, the next question, what do you need to do to make your mind your best friend and so that it can be a help in your deliverance? What can you do? Shri Radha Gopi Vallabha Ki. So, what can you do to your mind so it can help you in delivering you? Again, what? Practice and detachment. So these are the two key things you do. You train your mind in such a way that it doesn't get too distracted by doing practical devotional service and also practicing detachment. So that's how you train your mind. Okay, define tranquility for you. Not for me, not for Krishna, for you. That's important too. Peace of mind, it's all about that. You know, doing the devotional service, the goal is to have the peace of mind so you can have the controlled mind so you can think properly and you can act properly, right? So that's also like tranquility. Right. So how would you regulate your habits of eating, sleeping, recreation and work? That's a tough question. Anyone want to go?
This really is a very, very difficult, it's a really difficult question. I think that the most difficult thing to regulate in this for me is work, because it tends to expand, and I have a hard time
balancing,
finishing,
yeah,
and saying it can just keep going on and on and on.
Mm.
And so, I think, for me, knowing that I have a commitment to chant 16 rounds a day actually is the boundary around work.
Mm.
And it's become the place that ends work for me, rather than letting everything else sort of subsume time. That the knowing that I have that commitment and knowing where I am in terms of my progress that day and where I need
The issue for me is really regulating time in terms of being able to do all of these things in relation to devotional service. It's really the time piece that's, you know, not only eating, but having the time to eat things that are Krishna prasadam, not things that I wouldn't offer to Krishna, but I would eat. Not, you know what I'm saying, not doing that sort of thing. Even if they're items that meet regular principles, it's not, you know, they're vegetarian, no onions, no garlic, but there's some of those things that I would not offer. I guess the big thing for me is about time and really understanding the relationship between time and all of these kind of practical and mundane things really that I have to do in order to support my emotional service.
Perfect. Yeah. So, you know, all these four different things, eating, sleeping, working, and recreation. Recreation, maybe not, but you can actually make it all Krishna consciousness, I mean, Krishna conscious activities by just adding one thing. Add Krishna to it. You do that. You go and you do your work, and then, like, you eat, and then, like, sleeping and recreation, they are a little different, but you still can dream about Krishna.
Something that I think is really important is that there are certain aspects of devotional service that really are fun.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's not the primary, I mean, that's kind of a byproduct, I guess, in some ways. Kirtan, but, I mean, there's a certain fun.
So that's the recreation we all have, you know, come and participate in the kirtan and then chant and dance and have fun. That's also recreation. It's not that not necessarily we go and watch, like, you know, 6 hours of movie or something like that. It's still,
Wouldn't it be like recreation too? Like, you could make something recreational, spiritual, like, for instance, going to a good concert, you could distribute books at the concert.
Absolutely.
Is that...
Absolutely. That's also your devotional service. That's also your Krishna conscious activities.
Is that fair? You wanted to go to the concert because you like the music, but then you decided to...
You go and preach. You go and preach. We are all not, like, completely detached. We are not, like, you know, perfect yogis. So in that sense, like, not it. So that's the key.
We'll say too that, it's like we're moving at different speeds, all of us. And if for right now you still are attracted to going to see this concert, then I think that's a great way to bring Krishna into that.
Yeah.
And maybe later on, 5 years from now, or 10, or maybe never, you may not want to go to that concert anymore, it'll be something else, but you're still learning how to do that right now, doing the best that you can.
Yeah.
Right. And it's all about consciousness, because, like, you may probably sitting in the concert, but, you know, you actually hear the beautiful music, and then you will be thinking about Krishna. That's Krishna consciousness too. You know, you actually may be sitting here in the temple room, but if you are thinking about your shoe in the shoe rack, that's that's also there.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about the consciousness. You know, so you may be doing the thing, but if you are thinking about Krishna, that's good. That's bona fide. One person came to Prabhupada and asked Prabhupada, like, you know, I really like this, but I can't really give up drinking wine. What should I do? And then, like, Prabhupada thought about it for a few seconds, and then after that said, okay, alright, it's alright. You know, you are in the beginning stage, that's alright. But when you drink wine, you think about Krishna. You know, this is an example.
Yeah.
But it's not that, like, you know, we encourage people to, you know, drink alcohol and things like that, but this is an example. So Prabhupada actually engages everyone in devotional service. You know? So that is the key. It's all about the consciousness. So the last question is, how do you, would you, use suitable practice and detachment to gain control of the mind? Again, do 9 different aspects of devotion service. And which automatically brings the detachments, and it also helps us to avoid getting attracted to material sense objects. That's why we do that. To control the mind. So. All right. Thank you very much. I will stop there, and we will chant one round of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra together to finish the class.